It was my very first world show with APHA after I took the job as director of judges. And I'll never forget, we were standing on the concrete area there in the John Justin, kind of up where the video camera is. And it was myself and Mr. Smith and a few of the executive committee.
Dr. Smith, yes.
So a few of the executive committee members, and we're standing in a group talking. The show was just over. It was that day. Last class had just wrapped up. And this guy comes walking fast and looks a little bowed up as he's coming at us. And Billy and I both spot him from quite a ways off. And, you know, I'm thinking, this guy looks like he means business about something. I'm not sure what's going on, but he means business. He marches right up in the middle of us. And he kind of says to the whole group, he says, "Who's in charge of the judges around here?" And I kind of sit there, and Billy immediately answers before I can even say anything.
Because I'm a little quicker.
That's right.
Stephen Hayes, and along with me again today is Dr. Billy Smith. We have a special guest, kind of an Oklahoma legend, Joe Exotic's neighbor, Mr. Dave Dillon. And we also have John Briggs with us here as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about judging, the e-shows, the world shows that APHA has, and a few other fun things along the way. We're excited for this today's show. Thanks for being with us. Dr. Smith, you want to say anything in the opening here?
No, but I was thinking a little bit about Dave and it's the whole segment on judging. So think about Dave, what if you were going to judge a confirmation class of tigers, you know, since you're, so what would you look for? What would be good movement in a tiger?
I've had the opportunity to go to the GW Exotic Animal Park before. And, you know, once you're a trained evaluator, Billy, you just can't help but judge them. And so I've actually done that a little. I'll tell you, for me, it was just mainly trying to stay far enough away from the cages, because they would definitely come up to you and growl. And sometimes they might do some other things out towards the people looking around.
Keep your social distance.
Exactly. Yeah, you might get sprayed a little if you get too close.
You guys have both been bit by horses. So, what the heck?
What's the difference?
Yeah. Their people were here. Pardon Joe Exotic people were here right here at the office the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that?
That was...
Did you get on the bus?
No, but we looked at it and it was surreal and I just walked away. I couldn't imagine how many brain cells I might lose if I got too close to the bus.
Well, before we get too far down the Tiger King path, let's get into our show a little bit. Dave, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background so that the listeners that haven't met you before know a little more about you and where you came from?
Sure. No, I appreciate it. I'm super excited to be here. I think this is a lot of fun. I'm really excited to see this podcast kind of coming out and doing some things with APHA on that. And for those of y'all that don't know me, I am the APHA Senior Director of Judges, Shows, and Education. So I get to cover a lot of different ground and do a lot of different things within the association. And something that I'm super proud to get to be a part of. Super excited to get to work with some great staff members and directors and different members inside the organization. And I started out much like everyone else in the horse industry, showing as a kid. I didn't really grow up in a ranching or horse showing family. My dad was actually an aircraft mechanic and my mom was a novelist. And so I grew up in suburban Tulsa, basically just outside of Tulsa, a little town called Owosso, Oklahoma. And started showing 4-H open show.
It's not a real town. We went from Owosso to
Elmore City. That's right.
All right.
So
and your mom was a novelist. There's some fiction in there somewhere.
Well, now, Billy, I don't know about fiction anywhere. This is all true. Everything's true.
We'll see. So.
But kind of grew up doing that kind of stuff, the 4-H, the open shows, and didn't ever really have the financial capabilities to show on the breed shows at a high level, but always had that dream and that vision. So as I went through school, I started working for different horse trainers, worked for a trainer named Jess Hurd outside of Tulsa, and then went to school at Oklahoma State, graduated there. And when I got down to Oklahoma State, I went and worked for Gil Gallion for 4 years and really kind of got my feet wet in the pleasure horse world and the show horse world. And then went out on my own and trained for quite a while after that until Billy Smith called me and asked me if I wanted a job.
So, Billy, you hired Dave. So my question is, knowing now what you know and being from Oklahoma, and how far did you say, 20 minutes from Joe Exotic's park, why would you ever put him in charge of education?
You know, nobody bats 1,000. And and you can get in the Hall of Fame in baseball batting 300, even actually a little less than that. So I say, you know, that's just a strikeout is what that part of it is, just one strikeout.
One strike. Yeah. Okay. Well, before I make too much more fun of Dave, we'll move on. Let John tell us a little bit about himself and where he came from. And Pilot Point now, right? Somewhere right up in there.
Pilot Point now. I was grew up in New Mexico, just outside of Albuquerque. Tijeras was the town I was from. I come from a family that has been showing horses for generations. My great grandmother, she had horses that she showed back in the 50s and 60s. They did the cutting, the roping, the halter. Back then, the horses did all the events, you know. And it's kind of amazing to kind of look back at the trophies and stuff she won back then. And then my mom kind of carried through, got us back in the horses. She never showed herself, but she got horses for us to show, do the 4-H shows, the open shows. And my sisters and my brother and I, we all kind of showed all of our youth. And I just kind of got hooked and became a horse trainer, and from that was like 25 years ago. I've been training horses, and that's kind of my history.
Yeah, you must have some good genes because both of your sons are fairly successful trainers, right?
Yeah, they're into it too. They both went to college, and my oldest has graduated from college, and my middle boy, he's still in college, but he's involved in the horses. He really likes the cow horse and the roping.
Which he just won the collegiate Road to the Horse.
That's team, correct. Yeah. He was on a team for NCTC, and him and his teammates, there was two others of them, had a breakout, some two-year-old fillies, and picked from a group of fillies, and then from there they had to break them out. And by the end of the 2 days, you know, session, they had to go through like a ranch trail type pattern.
Yeah.
So I was really proud of him. He did a great job with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to go to that show for a little bit, and it was an awesome event to see some of those youth and what they could do with horses. It was really neat. And the team aspect I thought was really an interesting spin to the regular Road to the Horse. So
yeah, they had to keep it balanced, and I thought they did a good job of making sure everyone had their part and getting that horse to get broke in those 2 days. So,
so as a parent, what kind of show parent are you? Are you, because I've seen you ride and exhibit, you look pretty calm. And so when it's your kid, do you just, is it just more than you can take? Or are you pretty calm?
I take a step back. I mean, I'm competitive and I want him to win, but yeah. I definitely take a step back and become that parent that supports, you know, and tries not to, you know, give him too much coaching from the sidelines.
Do they ever say, Dad, go away?
Oh, for sure. Like, quite often, you know. He doesn't always think an all-around trainer, you know, works with a cowboy.
Right, yeah.
So everything I have to say doesn't always go.
Do you ever have someone instruct, some other trainer instruct one of your kids, and they just take to it, do exactly what the trainer says, and you think, I've been telling him that for 20 years.
Oh, that happens all the time. In fact, I think this last week, you know, he does have like a 2-year-old pleasure horse. He's been getting some help from Mike Hochtel. And so he'll go up there and ride with him. And I'm just amazed how well he listens and how patient he is. And,
So Mike knows everything. Right. And you're an idiot.
Right.
So
I got home and I tell him the same thing and it doesn't quite go over.
That's awesome. Yeah, that'll happen. Mm-hmm. So let's.
How would you know?
I don't know. I didn't do it myself, man. I don't have any kids.
You have no kids.
That's true. That's 100% accurate. And I'm not looking to have any either. Well, no, I don't want to deal with that at all. If I ever had children, I hope that they don't want to team rope or barrel race for that matter. My wife's a barrel racer. Don't do that. But I definitely don't want them to do Western Pleasure.
Sure. Of course.
So let's move into one of the reasons we came today was to talk about our e-shows and to get the judges' perspective. We've talked a little bit more on the competitor and we've got some feedback from that, as well as me and Billy's perspective. But we'd like to hear a little bit from you guys. We just did our third. We're fixing to start our fourth e-show. I think we're over 600 entries in the first three, which is amazing. And we're so excited for this program. A lot of great feedback. So we'll kick it off with the e-shows a little bit and kind of hear what you guys thought of the program and the platform from y'all's perspective, kind of being on the back end.
Yeah, sure. So I've been able to be a part of each one of them. I kind of work like a scribe and kind of help with the tech end of it, getting the comments recorded and those kind of things. And so I've gotten to be involved with multiple different judges. We use different judges each time whenever we do the e-shows and we've gotten to kind of work through that. So I've got to see different people and kind of how they've handled it on the backside as far as actually getting them evaluated. And to me, I think one of the most important aspects of the e-shows is the feedback that the judges are able to give to the exhibitors. And that's one of the things that we never really get to do in the real horse show environment. We give score sheets and they get to see score sheets, but the way judging has evolved in the horse industry, it's incredibly, incredibly complicated if you don't have a lot of time to go through and really educate yourself about what that plus half means when you see it on a score sheet, or what that zero means, or is an 82 good? Is a 76 good? Is a 65 bad? I mean, what does that really mean? And so it takes a lot of education on the exhibitor's part to learn how to be super competitive. And the exhibitors that are super competitive very well understand all of those aspects. They know what the judges are looking for. They know what not to do to stay out of the penalty box on stuff. And they have spent that time, whether they're a youth, an amateur, or a trainer, they have spent the time to really understand what it takes to be competitive and to win. So the beauty of the e-shows, and one of the things that I love the most about it, is we're able to communicate as a judge directly with that exhibitor in a really short amount of time and give them the critique. And that's kind of a really neat aspect to it. Obviously, you don't have to leave your house. You videotape yourself and send that video in, and we evaluate it and we give you our perspective from a judging standpoint as to what you're doing right and a few things that can help you get better. So from that aspect, I think it's been really, really helpful, really cool. I know from talking to a couple of the exhibitors after the fact, they've been very appreciative of the comments and felt like they gained a lot out of it. They felt like, you know, it's definitely going to help them when they go and compete in a real show. It's going to help them tremendously on that aspect.
Yeah. So you were kind of in on the very beginning. This is partly your idea to get this thing off the ground. So you saw kind of the tech side of what this was going to look like. But then when John was one of our judges, so John, for you, how was it on the backside when you started to use the platform and actually give feedback to the competitors? What was that experience like?
Well, it was fun. It was fun to do. When Dave asked me to do it, I wasn't really sure what to expect. You know, I didn't know how judging runs on a computer screen was going to work. So when I actually got there and found out how many participants we were going to have and we started at it, it was interesting to see like the different backgrounds of the people showing us their arenas and the regions that they were from. It was just really interesting to see that. And then it was pretty clear to be able to see everybody's run and be able to score it and then give that feedback, give that critique, you know. And Dave said it's real important to give, you know, a couple positives and a couple things that they could learn how to do things better. So we try to balance that out with those critiques, and I think it went over really well.
Yeah, definitely. And that is super important. If you just tell people what all they're doing good, it's hard for them to improve.
Absolutely.
At the same time, if you only tell them what to improve on, then they think they're not doing anything right. So finding that balance and being able to do that in a concise manner is time consuming. I mean, that's one thing I will say about it from the backside. We can judge a run as fast as that video lasts. If it's a minute and a half, it takes us a minute and a half to judge it. And because that's what we do all the time when
right.
we're judging horse shows. But to formulate the thoughts, figure out what we're going to say, how we're going to say it, and what's going to be useful information for somebody, that's a little more time consuming. I do want to comment to John's point, though. We often stop because I'm telling you, there are some people that have sent in videos that have unbelievable facilities.
Yeah.
They're
amazing.
Like beautiful snow-capped mountains in the background. You're like, oh my gosh, that is awesome. You know, and then we get a lot of international, so you get to see some really cool stuff, people from different countries, and you can tell it's a different country and it's not the U.S. So that's been pretty cool too, seeing that background in everybody's video.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let me ask you, since you brought that up. So you've seen any background that probably should not have been there in some of the videos?
I didn't see anything.
Not yet.
That was on there that yeah. was, you know, concerning.
Someone wanders through who shouldn't be there.
Yeah, no. It's been really humorous, though. We've seen a few dogs running through the arena during a run. You know, yeah. A dog will run right by the horse while it's doing something. Or we probably had one of the best judges for the showmanship. In the showmanship class, the exhibitor provides their own judge to walk around and do the inspection because that's part of what we're evaluating. And one of them had about a 4 or 5 year old little girl that was the judge, and they walked around. We got a kick out of that. But yeah, no, everything's been pretty tame so far.
So
yeah.
Would you get any points? Would you give any points if the judge was dressed up funny or had something fun? Is there like a bonus point thing? Like a plus one? Like, that was pretty awesome. I'm going to give him
yeah,
a plus.
Yeah, no, I don't know if we could give points. That wouldn't quite be fair, but that would be awesome to see. We might even have to do a whole class on that.
Oh, you people don't know what you just unleashed.
We just have a judges class of judges.
Totally. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
I like that idea.
I do too.
So we've had like, I think 37 classes the last one, maybe 20 before then.
Yeah.
What was the hardest for both you and John, Dave and John? What was the hardest class to give feedback in?
Probably the halter.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not getting the, I guess, the 3D effect of the horse. So that some of that muscling and definition of that horse is hard to see. Mm. And the lighting can affect that too. I felt like the halter was a little bit difficult.
Yeah. One of the things, I would agree, I think the halter is probably the most difficult. When you're live judging halter, you can walk around and see whatever angle, like for leg structure, leg conformation, you can get the angle you want to really evaluate something. And when it's on video, they may or may not have very much of that in the video.
Right.
So it's a little tricky. We give guidelines as to, you know, how many seconds from each side, and we want to see all four sides of the horse and those kind of things. But at the same time, you still, as a judge, you can go back and look at something. And so I would agree. I think the halter is pretty tough to judge and feel like you've really done well. The other part with classes like halter and pleasure, in real life, we evaluate them in real time at the same time. They're being shown together. We're on a video. You're watching a run, and then you're trying to remember that pleasure horse versus another pleasure horse, or that halter horse versus another one. When you have a score sheet, that makes it a lot simpler. And all of our individual work classes have score sheets where those do not. So those are probably a little different, a little challenging, I'd say, compared
yeah.
to
and
real
it
life.
And it can make it a little more time consuming.
Yeah.
We'd go back and we'd look at the top six
yeah.
and compare those again
yeah.
to kind of make sure that, you know, I had them exactly where I wanted to have them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, a little more difficult to remember those when you judge 30 individual runs of Western Pleasure and you're trying to say, okay, did I want that one first or second? You want to go back and take a second look at that and make sure you've got them lined up the way you want.
Right. Both of you have judged live shows and now e-shows, which is a new thing. People get nervous when they're in competition, right? And a lot of times you can read their nerves. If you're watching them come in the ring or whatever, you can kind of tell who's nervous, who's more comfortable, things like that. Have you noticed that at all on this online platform, any nerves by people as they're showing? Because, I mean, it's a different, you're just getting filmed, but it's still a competition.
No, I feel like they were a lot more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, being in their own kind of home mm-hmm. setting, I think helped them kind of show them more relaxed, and they did. I felt like they did a better job. So.
Yeah, I think some of that pressure's off. I think some of it as well, if you think about it, you can obviously, if you do something wrong and you don't like what your run is, just don't send in that video. You know, get your video the way you want it and send that in. And, you know, there's still lots of area to evaluate. There's still lots of things to figure out. I think a lot of the common misconception within, especially our pattern classes, our showmanship, horsemanship, and neck. When I say pattern, that's kind of what I'm referring to. But when I think there's a common misconception amongst exhibitors that it's all about laying out the pattern and how it's laid out, and they put a lot of emphasis on that. And that is important, but it's not the mainstay of it. I mean, we're really judging the communication between that horse and that handler in those classes. So that's something we totally can still evaluate on video, even no matter how many times you do your pattern or make it perfect in your mind, there's still going to be things that we're going to see and evaluate and be able to help give a critique on that can make that score improve or get better.
Absolutely. Dr. Smith, I'll bring you in on this a little bit too. Obviously, you've probably gotten calls and different things on this new platform. You know, has the feedback from the judging perspective, has anybody been beating up the judges?
No, and I'm actually a little disappointed that we don't get a little more.
I'm sure you are. We
get a little more.
I'm sure you are.
Judicial hate mail, but you know, it's got to mature, and as it matures, I'm sure we'll hear more judge complaints. But you know, the beauty of it from a same thing is true for judges. See, if they think they screw up, they can judge it again. No one ever knows. Which leads me to, both of you guys have had judge many shows between you. But so, John, what's the most embarrassing moment you've ever had in the ring as a judge?
As a judge in the ring, most embarrassing moment. Honestly, haven't had that many embarrassing moments.
Well, you better not go on some
I'm
wood.
Good at covering them up when they do happen.
Well, you're not anything like Dave. He's had hundreds of embarrassing moments.
I mean, it's tough when you get toward the end of the class and you don't know how you're going to place it. You know, that instant sweating, like, what am I going to do here?
You have a little panic moment.
It is a panic moment, and hopefully no one's ever seen me do that, but it does happen a lot.
Sure it does. I'll have to say, one of my most memorable probably not rated for audio. So. but my very first breed show to judge, I judge a lot collegiately, which is, you know, those are classes of four, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so you can keep track of four horses in a class pretty easy. My first breed show, I didn't really think through what it would be like to have 25 or more hunter under saddle horses that everyone's dressed the same or similarly with hunter under saddle attire going around you all at once and keeping all those numbers straight. And so my very first show, I was judging with an older judge named Gary Truby, who is just a legend in the judging world. He's been doing it a long time. He's a fantastic judge, always been a great judge. And I told him, I said, well, Mr. Truby, I'd really appreciate it if you call the gates in this so I can just concentrate on getting my numbers down on the card. He's kind of got a gruff voice, and he says, son, if I call those gates, you won't have one number on your card when I get done. I kind of thought, you know, he's kind of got a point there. Maybe I should call the gate. Well, thank goodness I did, because that first class of hunter under saddle with 25 novice amateurs, I bet they trotted for 15 minutes the second direction while I was trying to figure out what order I was going to put all these things in. Now, that's been, you know, 20 years ago, but it was still, I was sweating. I'm telling you, I'd sweat smooth through my shirt. Luckily, I had a jacket on. It was pouring off my face. I was like, oh, they're going to hate me. I'm never going to get another show to judge in my entire life. I was freaking out.
It's the paperwork that can be difficult when you're in that show.
Open. Yeah, you're right.
Keeping everything organized and
yep.
Getting the numbers correctly.
Not transposing a number.
You know, yeah. People don't realize when you have four numbers, a four-digit number versus a three-digit number, just how much more that is to try to keep track of. You know, mm-hmm. it's three-digit numbers are way simpler and way easier, especially when we're trying to get 12 or 15 numbers in a placing on our card, you know.
Yeah. Are you going to stay with that?
Whoa.
As an Elmore City guy, that the three versus the four-digit number is more complicated for you.
Well, yeah, that's okay. good solid logic, really. Okay.
I didn't realize. Yeah. Well, once you get in those right. thousands, it gets a little bit hard.
I'm telling you, exactly right. Mm. Yeah.
Those multiplication tables are a little hard growing up in Oklahoma.
So let's go back to the e-shows, and then we'll go in kind of our second segment here today. Okay. But if you had to give one recommendation, now that you've seen several runs and through this e-show platform, one recommendation, if I'm thinking about entering, what would you say to a competitor?
For me, there's two. Can I do two?
So, you can do
right?
two.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So for me, number one is know your rules and know your pattern. Okay. So those two things are super, super important. We have had exhibitors send us videos of them doing the pattern incorrectly. So that's actually one of the beauties that we have kind of developed through e-shows is if that happens in the class calls for that. We judge all the classes by APHA rules. So if the class were to call for that exhibitor to be disqualified in a live horse show, we then roll them over to the next show. So their entry fee isn't just wasted per se,
yeah.
but they get rolled over to the next show at no additional charge. But that still takes them out of the current show that they entered, and they've got to do a new pattern and do it over again and everything else. So I would say double, triple check your video. Watch your video, look at the pattern, make sure what you see on video matches that pattern, because that is one of the things that as judges we are tasked with is making sure, because it is a disqualifying offense in a majority of the classes. So that's number one. Number two, I would say hold your phone sideways. If you're gonna video with a phone, hold it sideways so you get that panoramic sideways type view versus the up and down view, because it's a whole lot easier to view those on the screen if it's the whole picture versus a little sliver.
Absolutely. John, what do you think?
I think they just make sure that the horses are cleaned up well. There was a few horses that were not sufficiently cleaned up and presented well. They don't have to dress up, just, you know, nice long sleeve shirt and cleaned up, and just, I think they should try it. Once they try it, I think they're really going to like it.
Yeah.
And I think that getting that critique from the judge is something that's going to benefit them.
Absolutely.
So I just think it's a good thing. We're heading in the right direction with this e-show for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I would say talking about the attire part, that's something we've had a lot of questions on, because there's lots of different virtual shows out there, but you know, we're judging it by the APHA rule book. So we did utilize the legal attire rules in there. Legal attire doesn't necessarily mean fancy. A lot of times people kind of misconstrue that, especially at the horse show, because they see those super expensive, fancy outfits and everything else. It's not about the outfit at all, but legal attire is as simple as wearing, for the Western event, wearing a cowboy hat, a long sleeve shirt, and pants and boots. You know, it is truly that simple. And we're gonna evaluate it exactly the same. You know, if somebody's wearing that, or they're wearing a $5,000 jacket with a bunch of sparkly sequins all over it, isn't gonna make a bit of difference as far as our evaluation on that. So I think that's something that is super important for people to know.
Yeah. So as long as you're wearing the Dave Dillon fancy, you're good. But if you go a different route,
exactly
yeah.
right, man.
Yeah.
Have you anybody right. wear short pants?
No.
How short becomes too short? In the rules?
Well,
like how much?
You know, what's the rule in school? Dollar bills width above the knee. Anything longer than that, you're good to go, Billy.
This episode is brought to you by Ram Rodeo. From horses to horsepower, saddle up. Bold, powerful, and capable. Ram has the perfect vehicle to get you to the next great event on the circuit.
Okay, so well, we've talked a little bit about the e-shows and the judges' perspective there. APHA also has the Youth World Show and the World Show. So a couple questions around that. Y'all both Well, I don't know. Have you ever judged the world shows?
I have judged other world shows, but not the APHA world show.
Okay. So Dave has not judged the world shows, but he's been involved for the past 7 years, eight years, something like that.
Seven.
And John, I think you've judged several of both. So, okay. So I've got a few questions. Wondering if, I'm sure you've judged other shows. So does your thought process as a judge differ any going into a major event like the Youth World Show or the World Show? Or is it just, it's the same, there's no pressure, you just do your job and walk out of there?
I definitely try to judge every show during the year like it is a world show. So by the time I go to a world show to judge, it feels the same to me. But you definitely can feel the intensity of judging a world show. And you want to do a great job when you're out there in that pen, so you feel the pressure, for sure. You get nervous just like the exhibitors do because you want to judge it correctly. So, but I know like a world show, when we're with Dave and he's the guy in charge, he's got us prepped really well before we go into that show pen. We've watched videos, we've gone over the penalties, we feel really prepared when we go out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So one question I've always wondered, I'm not a judge, but I've dealt with judges and I've dealt with many director judges. So my question is you always see the scribe there. So do you have a scribe because judges don't know how to read and write, or is it there? What's the reason?
It's because what we do is so incredibly complicated. It takes somebody to write it down, Steve.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's the bottom line to it, man.
So you got a level of sophistication above everybody else that you got to have. I'm with you.
It's unbelievable.
Oh, nice. Okay. Just thought I'd make sure.
It's like we're doctors too. The way we write.
Doctors. That is the first time I've ever heard a judge compare himself to a doctor.
I like it. Well done, John.
They wouldn't be able to read our writings.
Yeah. Exactly.
We really elevated this conversation.
Yeah.
No, I'll tell you the honest truth on the scribing situation. We are tasked with never taking our eyes off of that run. And anytime you're scribing, you've got to figure out what box to write it down in, right? So the minute you look down, something could happen that could really affect whatever's going on in there. There are obviously classes that you don't have to have a scribe for if they don't have a score system to them, or if you can score them at the end of the run. Either way, if the run's fast enough. But man, there's so many decisions, so many things that we're trying to evaluate and trying to figure out and make sure we have all the penalties right and all of that kind of stuff, that the scribe is an essential part of getting it done correctly. And I think John said it really well. No matter what show we go to, we're trying to get it right. That's the absolute goal. Every exhibitor deserves a correctly judged class and evaluation. And when I was a kid growing up, the old adage always was, well, if you don't like that judge's opinion, just go to another horse show the next weekend, you'll get a different opinion. And what I teach in the judges' seminars whenever we're talking about that is that thought process has changed and it's morphed in time and kind of developed into they're not looking for your opinion. They're looking for your educated opinion based upon the standards that are in the rule book. And that's really what we kind of gear to and focus on when we do the judge prep sessions like what John's talking about. I think that's probably the biggest difference between the weekend show and the world show level. Those exhibitors, they practice and they get ready. Well, judges practice and we get ready as well. And I think that's something that we spend a lot of time back in that judge's room getting focused and getting ready when we go and step out there. And that way we can give the very first horse in the draw the same evaluation that we can give the last horse in the draw. So we're not sitting there on the first one going, now, what was this pattern? Are they supposed to trot there? Are they supposed to lope there? I mean, all of that stuff is very locked into our minds from the minute we sit down at any major competition.
Absolutely.
Any major competition.
Absolutely. So when you're in the back room, at what point in the day do y'all get to decide what you're going to have for dinner?
John knows that.
Right? Yeah. That's a high priority, right?
So is it like 8 a.m., like before the first cup of coffee, or is it, lunchtime?
I think it's something we're talking about all day long. Like,
what's going to be? Yeah, there we go.
There's the truth. That's the truth. Yep.
Absolutely.
When I was a kid growing up in the desert, one of the greatest thrills we had was
by the desert, you mean West Texas.
West Texas is to go to the cuttings because after the cutting, there was always someone there to meet the judge, and it almost always ended up in a fight. So, so how many fights have you been in after judging?
Because I can't say I've ever been in a fight. Yeah.
I can say I've been accosted a few times, but it never came to blows, mainly because it was an angry mother. The most memorable one, I didn't pick her kid in the lead line to place as high as that mother thought I should have, and that was kind of a dangerous situation for me there because she was pretty angry.
Uh-huh. Well, granted, you know, when Billy talks,
line. It is lead line, and that's a little bit difficult to judge. Yeah, so.
I hate placing lead line. Yeah.
There's some more truth from John Briggs. Yeah.
Well, granted, you know, Billy's memories from his childhood. That was a long time ago. So, you know, it's changed since
right,
then. You know,
right,
it was like,
right,
you know, black and white TV, and, you know, we have color now. So it's like, it's all good.
What do you mean TV?
Oh, I didn't have to do that, Zinger. He gave it right to me. Yeah. Okay. So going back to the Youth World Show, you've both been involved for a long time. Give me the most memorable experience. It can either be funny or it can be, you know, heart-wrenching, whatever it was, but that you, it just sticks out in your mind. I'll never forget that at an APHA Youth World or World Show.
For me, it was my very first World Show with APHA after I took the job as director of judges. And I'll never forget, we were standing on the concrete area there in the John Justin, kind of up where the video camera is, and it was myself and Mr. Smith and a few of the executive committee.
Dr. Smith, yes.
So a few of the executive committee members, and we're standing in a group talking. The show was just over. It was that day. Last class had just wrapped up, and this guy comes walking fast and looks a little bowed up as he's coming at us. And Billy and I both spot him from quite a ways off. And, you know, I'm thinking, this guy looks like he means business about something. I'm not sure what's going on, but he means business. He marches right up in the middle of us, and he kind of says to the whole group, he says, "Who's in charge of the judges around here?" And I kind of sit there, and Billy immediately answers before I can even say anything.
Because I'm
and
a little quicker.
That's right. That's right. And he says, "Well, that depends. Are you happy with the judging, or are you upset about the judging?" And he goes, "No, I actually think this is one of the best judge world shows I've been to, and I don't even know when. It's been fantastic." Billy goes, "Oh, well, in that case, I'm in charge of the judges." Yeah, that's what I knew. This is going to be a whole different kind of job right here.
Yeah, this is
a whole different perspective for me.
That's the way that works.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in your job description. There's a little line that says duties as assigned.
Right, right.
Well, there you go.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So that was one of my first experiences at the APHA.
Yeah, one you'll never forget right there.
Exactly.
Credit's taken right away from you.
Right.
Yeah, be quicker than Billy Smith.
That's right.
John, what about yourself?
I can remember, this didn't happen at the World Show. It was during the World Show. I remember being in a hotel room and the fire alarm going off.
Oh, yeah, I do.
And we all kind of congregated in the parking lot for a few hours while they were trying to figure out if there was a fire or what was going on. So I remember not getting a lot of sleep that night.
Yes.
And then having to judge a really long day the next day.
They were wiped out. Yeah. Every judge was exhausted at the end of the next day.
Yeah. Every time I go into that show pen, like the first class at a World Show, I mean, it just kind of overwhelms you a little bit. You kind of realize where you're at, and it's a neat feeling.
It is to
have that happen. And,
We got, you know, it's a lot of history there. There's a lot of world champions been crowned in that arena. You know, just to think back through some of that, it's got to be amazing. Even as a judge, to say, you know, because you predict who's going to be a world champion that year and years to come, and that's something that those people will hold for the rest of their lives. So that's got to be an awesome feeling.
I think that's where the jitters really come from to me, is it's such an honor to get that opportunity to make those decisions, you know, and that stems from a lifetime of trying to educate yourself and get better at what you're doing and hone your craft. But the honor of getting to judge a world championship event is something that I think I know I will always hold near and dear. I know it's something I think about every single year as we prepare for the APHA World Shows is how can I do a better job this year than what I did last year at making sure the judging is as good as it can possibly be to be able to give that experience to those exhibitors, you know, because I think it's like anything else. Everybody wants to get it right, you know. The question is the preparation that you do in order to get it right is what's key. Because if you prepare well and you're really solid in what you're doing and understanding everything that you need to be able to keep track of, whether it's the paperwork or the standards or the penalties or any of the preparations that you need, that gives the exhibitors their very best opportunity that everything is done. Like I said earlier, by the standards of the rule book, not just your opinion that day. And I think that's what's key. That's where the horse industry has changed so much over the years.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So then we've heard a little bit that the lunge line from John said that's the hardest or the worst to judge.
Lead line.
Okay. So then what would you say is your favorite classes to judge? Well, I know Dave's is probably Western Pleasure, but.
You know it.
Cow horse for me. Yeah. I just think it's a very energized class, and I love seeing those horses work a cow on the fence. It gets me going. I like that class.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we've got a lot of great classes. I mean, I made my living in the Western Pleasure industry, and it's something I will always hold near and dear. I still love to see a really good pleasure horse really doing its job well. It's like any event. I don't care what event it is. That was one of the things that I learned from a lot of the trainers I was fortunate enough to be around growing up and learning from. They had a great appreciation for any type of horse competition. A great barrel run is just as attractive as anything else. And a bad barrel run is just as ugly as a bad pleasure run or a bad reining run or any discipline. So I think that for me, I enjoy the aspect, especially now, because I feel like I've grown a lot personally. My knowledge level has increased significantly because I'm now trying to oversee the education and the judging of every event, whether it's the cow horse or the cutting or the pleasure or whatever. So I've grown a lot in my knowledge level from where I was 10 or 15 years ago to now. And I think for me, it's one of those things, a great run in whatever event still makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. I mean, I love it. Whereas to rein in the cow horse, the pleasure, you know, whatever, great halter horse. It's, you know, the conformation's just gorgeous on it. I mean, any of them is really, really neat to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So John, in the cow horse, I've seen a few cow horse runs where the cow leaves the building. You ever judged one of those?
I have, actually. I was judging in Tennessee, and I had a cow jump over the railing into the stands.
Near you?
Near me, yeah. I had to help round it up.
Did you get his head? Were you the header?
I was on the foot. I just shushed it back into the arena, but that was pretty exciting to see.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, most people don't know this, but you know, the great Dr. Billy Smith, he's judged some stuff before too.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, he's a judge, man. He can sit right in the ring with everybody.
A trained evaluator.
He'll judge the heck out of you. You'll feel judged when you leave.
You will, won't you? I know that 100%. Feeling. Yeah.
So what you got?
I'm a two-leg judge, not a four-leg.
Yeah. So
I've seen a few of them leave the building too.
That's right.
Yes, you have.
So you have any memorable experience you want to share about your judging career, the lucrative career you had?
You know, I got a piece of mail yesterday. You know, I was a teacher for a while. Mm-hmm. So I got a piece of mail. I got a graduate. This is how old I am. I got a graduation announcement from a kid whose mother I had in as a teacher.
Wow.
And his name's Maximilian Merle. That's his name. And Maximilian is, I think, 7'1". And he's going to be starting. He's going to play at Stanford, basketball at Stanford. So I take complete
credit for that.
Again, he takes credit.
Exactly.
Right there. Anytime he acts a million, reach his true potential. True.
Yeah.
See, he's a credit taker, man.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, he's still teaching us this day. Don't trust him. I'm telling you, he'll take your credit right from underneath you.
No, I tell Max, Maximilian's parents that I take full credit for trying to develop this whole thing.
Oh, you get blamed
for so many things. You have to look for places where you can take credit. Some credit.
Yeah, that's a good plan. It's a solid strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it plays out for him.
I will tell you this, though. Kind of seriously. Getting to watch judges, really good judges, is a profoundly unique experience because I struggle with how judges are able to judge all of those classes at a really high level. And that's why we spend a lot of time and money on education, because it takes a lot of education to keep these judges super sharp, because it's a big, thick rule book with a lot of stuff to remember. So that's pretty amazing to me that anybody can do that, which is why I only judge the two-legged kind.
Yeah, good call. Nice.
Because there is no rule
book. There is no rule book. It's whatever you want to do. Right. Yeah, you just go with your feeling. You literally get to judge somebody.
Right, right.
So you talked a little bit about the training and the education. So my question is, you hired Dave. We're going to go back to that for just a minute. You hired a guy that lived in Elmore City, which, by the way, is where the movie Footloose came from. Was it? Dave probably wasn't alive when that all was going on, but you probably were, right? That was back when you were a teenager or something like that. Yeah. So was it your fondness of Footloose and that whole story is why you hired him, or?
The reality is, I didn't ever believe Elmore City existed for years. I thought it was made up. His mom was a novelist. She's made it up. He bought into it. That's what I thought. Are you kidding me?
So we've talked a little bit about judging and the concept and how world shows go and e-shows. And, there's a lot of misconception, I guess, over the years. Judging's evolved a lot through the last, I'd say 20, 30 years, but there's still some misconception. So if you could debunk 5 myths about judging that you hear on a regular occasion, what would those 4 or 5, whatever that number is, be right off the top of y'all's heads?
For me, I guess I've been judging like 20 years, and I'll hear from exhibitors and other trainers that the judges have an agenda sometimes when they go into that show pen. That they already kind of have a plan of what they want to do, that they're not just going out there and judging the class. And, all the judges I've judged with in that period of time have never, ever had an agenda. I don't have an agenda. We go out there, everybody that I've judged with tries to judge that class or that event for what it is at that time, puts the most that they could put into it, and judge it right. I mean, that's what they're trying to do. There's no agenda to it, so I'd like to clear up that myth. Another one is sometimes when that show pen, we're in there for hours and the judges might have a little conversation here and there. And it's never about the exhibitors and talking about them or what they're
it's
doing.
It's about dinner that night.
Exactly. About dinner. Exactly.
It's usually we're talking about dinner, we're talking about family, we're talking about something completely different than the horse show or the exhibitors, because we just need something else to think about.
Right.
We're trying to get the placings right. We're trying to get the rules right. So our mind's on that all the time. So a second here or there where we can talk about something else, that's usually what we try to do.
Yeah, and decompress a little bit from what you're doing. I mean, you're ultimately there to do a job, and you're there to do your job. And then when you get a break, you want to decompress a little bit before you re-engage in whatever the next class may be.
For sure. And then we come back and we do a better job if we get just a few minutes to decompress.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's one of the things I think a lot of people don't realize. I didn't realize it until I judged some classes, of how many decisions you make on 1 3-minute run. I mean, there are literally dozens of decisions that you will make in 3 minutes. Now take that times 30 or 40 an hour. Now take that times 8 hours. I mean, you're now talking about thousands of decisions. Is that a plus half? Is that a plus one? Was that a penalty one or was that a penalty 3? all of those things are going through your mind when you're actually judging the run. So that little 5 minute break while they're doing the awards or the placings or whatever, that is a great time to just kind of decompress, relax your mind a minute, talk about family, how's your family doing, you know, whatever. But that I agree with John. That's a huge part of that I think is a misconception. I'll hear people say that. They think it's, you know, they're talking about the placings or whatever. Well, we just judged the class. We don't need to talk about the placings. We just judged it. We know what the placings are. So that's one thought. I will tell you a couple of the ones that I would like to debunk. Number one is that it's all about the clothing of what people wear, the attire. I touched on it earlier when we were talking about the e-shows, but the bottom line, we evaluate a whole lot of things out of the rule book, those standards and those guidelines that we talk about in each individual class. And they're radically different in all the different classes. There's lots of different things that we evaluate from the reining compared to, say, Western Pleasure or a roping run or a working cowhorse run. We're looking for different things in each one of those disciplines. None of it has to do with the outfit. None of it does. And yeah, you want to look nice. I mean, it's one of those things. You don't want to show up in sweatpants and, you know, a t-shirt. Obviously, it's not legal, but you don't want to look sloppy as you're out there. But a really nice long sleeve, plain shirt, cowboy hat, you know, well shaped, that's not, doesn't look like it's been in the backseat of your truck for 2 months and you just pulled it out, stuck it on your head. Those kind of things are all that really matters. You know, you want to look nice, you want to look clean and presentable, but at the same time, I hear that very often. Well, I can't afford to do that because I can't buy that $5,000 showmanship jacket. Well, I've seen some awesome showmanship runs that I've scored in the 90s that would win a lot of major shows with somebody just wearing a plain shirt, hat, and pair of blue jeans. You know, I mean, it's one of those things that where they're evaluating the attributes of that class, we're not there doing a fashion show. So I think that's one. The other one I really want to touch on that I think is super, super important. Just because a judge places a horse first in a class doesn't mean that is the judge's ideal for that discipline. Okay. And that's a real common misconception that we've seen over the years, especially in the classes that don't have a score sheet. So if you have a score sheet, it's really easy to see, oh, well, that horse broke gate, so it got the 3-point penalty, but it was 4 points ahead of everybody else, so it's still the winner. That makes sense to people because the score sheet's there. In the non-scored classes like halter, pleasure, hunter under saddle, you can have a horse that has a fault that would be a penalty in another class possibly, but it could still be your winner in that class just the same as it could be in a scored class. People don't see it that way. Oh, the judge was looking right at it and they broke gate. Well, it still might be the best one in that pen, even with that break of gate. Or, Well, they must like low heads because they let that one win. Well, what about its shoulders and its movement and its flatness of its legs and its cadence and its rhythm? I mean, there's lots of other things we evaluate just besides a single trait. Yeah. And I think that's something really important for people to understand. You can win a class with a 62 run. That's not a good score. That's 70s average in our scored event. So a 62 is not a good run, but it could still be the winner because we're simply evaluating that group on that day.
Right.
So I think that's something really important that often gets missed in the conversation, if you will, that I hear in the stands or back at the stalls or whatever it may be. So those are a couple I'd like to debunk a little.
Yeah. So that's what you're saying essentially is that not necessarily every class is going to predict the future of what you should get your show horse to do going forward. You still want the best of what you can do and not what that year got placed, because it may have been the best of those horses, but not maybe the best horse you've ever seen.
You bet. And what we place does matter a lot. That's what people will follow. But right. Don't fall into the trap of just because it wins a major event that it's the ideal.
Yeah.
Because you can win a major event and still have a penalty, still have a fault, whatever it may be. And so there's things out there now. Horse IQ is a product that we've had out for several years now that does a really good job of explaining with video footage what an excellent whatever looks like, whether it be an excellent lope or an excellent balance to a halter horse or excellent front leg conformation. Poor front leg conformation or a poor lope. It gives you and it labels all that for you. And so that creates that standard that I talk about all the time that's in the rule book. We simply turn the written word of the rule book into a video form because so many of us, including myself, are very visual learners. It's hard for me to read it and know what that's supposed to look like. But if I can see a video of it, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Smith, you want to add anything to this?
I'm just trying to get a picture of Dave at a fashion show.
Oh, man, I'd be awesome. I'd be awesome.
It's just hard for me to get my head around.
Well, I'm pretty fashionable myself, so.
You know, I saw when he says he's not... He's a visual learner. What he really means is he don't read too good.
Yeah. That'll happen. Yeah. Well, I did see a rather fashionable image of Dave Dillon with a cute little purple bow tie thing tied up. You know, he looked like a baby. I mean, he looked, you know, he's gray now. If anybody's not sitting here, he is super gray. But back then, you know, he's clean shaved. You know, he's still probably like 30, I'd say. Because, I mean.
He looked like. When we hired Dave, we needed a picture to announce his that we had hired him. And we get this, it was like his sixth grade graduation picture. You got to give me one where you look like an adult. So I need one with your beard on and you can't shave your beard.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't send out a pic. Not everyone knows you. We can't send out your sixth grade graduation picture.
Yeah.
Big floppy ears.
Okay. The truth is, as a horse trainer, when you get hired for a judging job, I didn't have a lot of pictures of me in judging attire, but I thought, you know, probably ought to send him a picture with some judging attire. So I used the one from my judges.
From his sixth grade.
No, from my
from his high school course. Yeah.
From my judge's application at age 25, and I didn't really think much of it.
Just, or well, 12. It's there, the same.
There's a picture of me in judging attire. I'll send that in. And so I was 25, not sixth grade.
25, but you
look
15.
Yeah, I did. I look pretty 12. Young. Yeah.
Look 10. I promise he had not shaved. He was incapable of shaving at that.
Well, I tell you what, thinking of this beard thing, you've got to shave, Dr. Smith.
It is awful.
It is so awful. I always wondered why, you know, Dr. Smith always just had a goatee going. Well, right. Now I know.
Yeah,
you
know,
see
right.
him. It is the most patchy gray thing.
Yeah, kind of mangy looking on the sides.
Yeah. I mean, you know, most people say, well, if I grow a beard, I look more manly.
Right.
No, not Dr. Smith. It's like, no, you look more white, man. No, don't do that.
John's got some extra. I've never seen him grown out.
Yeah,
like
John's
that.
Look a little shaggy too.
It's time for a haircut for everybody.
Two months since a haircut.
Yep.
Yeah, this quarantine thing's got us all looking shaggy.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'm letting this go. I'm not brave part of this.
I can't even respond to that.
Yeah, if you're listening to this podcast, please, the next show the APHA has, please bring clippers. Me and Dave will hold Billy down and let you shave his beard.
Agreed.
100%. I'm in.
Oh, you know, it's wisdom. This is
right.
Right. I've earned every one of these gray hairs, every last one of them. You've contributed to some of that.
I'm sure he has. I'm sure he has.
I'm proud of it. That's like a badge of honor. Yeah. Well, we'll kind of wrap up our podcast for today. Man, I think it was a great show. It was great to hear some of the feedback from the judges' side of things on both the e-shows and some of the world shows. I think it's good content on some of these myths that we hear throughout the horse industry as a whole. Hopefully someone will take something with that and actually learn something after today. So we'll go ahead and close it out. Guys, I thank y'all for being here and being a part of this. Dave's got to get back to his neighbor, Joe Exotic, and I think he's helping with some feeding time or maybe pizza making or something, man. I'm not sure, but we'll let him get back. And John, I know you got to go get on some horses probably, but we really appreciate it. And Dr. Smith, you got any final words before we close it out?
No, I can't beat that. Cannot do that.
Okay, well, that wraps us up in the Mark for Greatness podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next show.